morning, everyone, and welcome to this morning's session on quality measurement and reporting, second part. My name is Alexandru Gerasim. I work for Eurostat in the quality team. I deal mainly with quality reviews and generally with the quality, common quality framework of the European statistical system. We will have five presentations this morning on this topic, one from the European perspective and four from national perspectives, each taking 12 minutes. We'll take questions at the end. You can also send questions via Twitter using the hashtag, which is on screen, Q2018 session 5. And we will take them in rounds at the end of the presentations. So as I was saying, we have an interesting presentation on the quality reporting setup at European level. We'll kick off with that. We'll then see how the quality management system is implemented in practice at Statistics Denmark. We'll continue with the presentation on the balance between coherence, accuracy, and the need for flexibility in the domains of business statistics at Destatis, especially in the context of RIBS. Then we will hear a presentation on how to measure accuracy when we can't rely on sampling error, and how to measure other quality dimensions for non-survey data from a Canadian perspective. And lastly, we will have a presentation on how to assess quality in official statistics for both continuous improvement and compliance with the Code of European Statistics Code of Practice, or Codes of Practice in general, in Statistics Sweden. With this introduction, I will kindly ask my colleague, Javier Alcantara, to present his paper, which is called Quality Reporting in the ESS, State of Play and Next Steps. Javier is my colleague. He works at Eurostat in the quality team. He's mainly in charge of quality reporting developments and also works on the quality reviews in Eurostat. He has a background in mathematics. So please, Javier.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I hope you can hear me well. So I would like to present the topic of my presentation, which is quality reporting in the European statistical system, where we are and what challenges ahead we have. And the outline of my presentation is the following one. I will first talk about the four main pillars in quality reporting in the European statistical system, which are the legislation, the quality reporting standards that we use, the technical implementation in practice, and the guidelines that are very diverse and sometimes not non-homogeneous. And the challenges ahead mainly are achieving further harmonization, achieving also interoperability of the different metadata systems that we use, and finally the coordination function. So, well, I hope probably you cannot read it well, but I will explain this diagram. On the left-hand side, we have more the legislation side. So this first pillar is about legislation. So it's mainly only the left-hand side part of the slide. That would be the hard power of the Commission to set legislation that member states have to abide by. And the right-hand side would be more like the soft power, the gentleman's agreement, or the voluntary agreements that we have reached in order to understand each other. The legislation starts with the Treaty of Functioning of the European Union, that in Article 338 already says that the production of statistics in the European Union shall conform to impartiality, reliability, objectivity, cost-effectiveness, and already some of the quality criteria that we are familiar with. Then the main important statistical legislation that we have is the Regulation 223/2009, that in Article 12 is dedicated to quality, and it already sets seven quality criteria. It also says that member states shall send to Eurostat reports on the quality of the data, so that there won't be data without metadata. And it also allows that the modalities, the structure, and the periodicity of the quality reports shall be defined in sectoral legislation, which will be the third level picture there. And the, for example, the next upcoming sectoral legislation will be the quality reporting implementing acts for the main framework regulations that are upcoming. We have one on social statistics, yes. We have one on farm statistics, IFS, and another one of business and FRIPS. And then, as I've said, on the right-hand side, it's more the standards that, of course, they are non, they don't form part of legislation, and the code of practice and the quality assurance framework. Then the second pillar will be the quality reporting standards that we use in the ESS. These are the three main standards that you already know. We have ESMS, which is user-oriented, and it stands for Euro SDM Mixed Metadata Structure. The main difference, when it's user-oriented, it focuses more on the principles of the code of practice about the statistical output, which are principles 11 and 15, which are relevance, accuracy and reliability, timeliness and punctuality, coherence and comparability, and accessibility and clarity. Then we have another standard that was created, which was the ESQRS, which is the ESS standard for quality reports, and is more producer-oriented. It goes much more in detail about things like sampling errors, for example, and it focuses more on the principles of the code of practice 7 to 10, which are more on statistical processes, mainly on about the using of sound methodology and appropriate statistical procedures. And finally, we came up with SIMS, which means Single Integrated Metadata Structure. What it does, it merges the two concepts, and it harmonizes a little bit, because sometimes even for the same concept name, sometimes they had different definitions and guidelines, and what it did is it provided a merging and a harmonization of the two. I must say that now we are presently in the three structures, we're in version 2.0 of each of them. I would like to say that at the end of 2015, the European Statistical System Committee endorsed SIMS 2.0 and its underlying structure, ESMS 2.0 and ESQRS 2.0, as the structures to be used. And it set a deadline of the end of 2018 to implement all these three standards in all statistical domains. I will talk later in a further slide, but more or less in June 2018, the rate of implementation is about 70%. For the technical implementation, we use the ESS metadata handler. I just added a picture here that I'm sure those who have used it already recognize it. It's a tool used for the compilation and transmission of the quality report. It is SDMX compliant, which is a standard for data metadata exchange, and it uses XML structures, which are defined in what is called an MSD, a metadata structure definition. And here, what you can see is on the left-hand side, you can see the different metadata flows, which is basically when you align a particular structure with a particular domain. About the implementation, here you can see both for the mandatory data sets and for the all data sets. I mean, some of them are voluntary, the rate of implementation. So SIMS, ESMS, and ESQRS 2.0 has been implemented in about 70% of the metadata that you will see in Eurostat website. I'm talking mainly about the summary reports that we write, because then what you do nationally is a different thing. But so more or less, the thing is that the 30% that is remaining is probably the hardest one. I mean, this as recognized by my colleagues in the implementation unit. So this doesn't mean that we must be self-critical, that probably we won't reach 100% by the end of the year, but okay, we will try. And a little bit here in the different directorates. For those that are not familiar with the structure of Eurostat, Directorate C is for national accounts production, except the part of Directorate D, which is excessive deficit procedure and government finance statistics. Then we have E for sectoral statistics, which goes from agriculture to energy, F, social statistics, and G, business statistics. I would like to say that, as you can see, the one that has it least implemented is the EDP and Government Finance Statistics Directorate, but it doesn't mean that, of course, it's probably the directorate with the data sets that are more quality checked and almost audited, and where Eurostat has more powers, but the thing is that they presently are not using the standards and structures that the rest of Eurostat use. Finally, okay, we'd like to talk about the guidelines and advice. We have the picture you have there is the ESS handbook of for quality repos, the 2014 edition. And for next year, we are preparing an updated edition that they will be fully aligned with SIEMS 2.0. It will try to include new statistical process and new sources of data, mainly multi-source statistics and administrative data. And what we would like in this handbook is to have all the different guidelines that are spread in a lot of documents to at least to be a single reference point and to provide as many examples as possible of bits of the quality reports for to serve as an example for those who have to send them. Well, the challenges ahead mainly is achieving more harmonization. It's true that one particular complaint that we receive is that there is a lot of different legislation and guidelines. So first, we want to fix this with the ESS handbook. I must also be pragmatic, and it's true that sometimes full harmonization is not achievable. I mean, the implementation, I represent the let's say, the standard setters of quality, but in Eurostat, then we have the ones that implement it, the metadata unit. And it's true that sometimes they get a lot of requests of particular specific things about different data sets or domains. And what we are trying to do at least is to respect the structure of the reporting structures that we have defined. And if something is needed, to include it in subconcepts, but not change the basic skeleton of the structure so that the tools and the structures are used by everybody. About legislation, well, I always try to remind the colleagues that they should use the standards. What happens is that not all of them require all the concepts of SIEMS, so they might not have any sampling errors if they are administrative data. So sometimes you see and you think that it's missing, but what is important is that when it is implemented, that they use the metadata handler, and even though perhaps in the legislation they have listed it in an order consecutively and they have missed some concepts in the middle because they don't use them, then in the metadata handler they will be in the appropriate place. And about interoperability, there are some issues about when you have your own metadata systems in your countries and about which might be different from the metadata handler. So we would like to share with you the tool so that it can be adapted to your needs. And finally, it's true that we need more coordination, both inside Eurostat, in your own NSIs. And also, I would like to stress that since other national authorities are also providers of European statistics, be that ministries of education, for example, for education statistics, they should also respect the quality reporting standards. And this is also, I think, a function of your NSIs inside the country to fulfill. And finally, I would like to say that we encourage also the publication of the national quality reports. In the legislation, it's only said that Eurostat shall publish a summary report of all countries. But it's not compulsory, but we encourage you to publish, like it's shown here for Labor Force Survey, that you can see on the right-hand side that all the national quality reports are available, and which we can only do if we have your consent. Okay. Then thank you for your attention, and I look forward to your questions later after all the presentations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Javier. So now I will invite Karin Blix from Statistics Denmark to present her paper on raising awareness and continuously improving quality in Statistics Denmark. Karin is quality coordinator at Statistics Denmark. She has done this job for the last 4 years. She has a very broad experience as a statistician in various domains, such as national accounts, price statistics, housing statistics, and many others. I kindly ask Karin to start her presentation.
Thank you. And thank you, Javier, for starting, because then I don't have to say the same things. That's good. The quality management system in Statistics Denmark. We have the European frame that Javier already explained to you, so I will just jump to our local frame, where we work on quality awareness in dissemination of statistics and quality awareness in the production of statistics. So in practice, our management system is built on three pillars, where we do our daily work on quality, and that is our documentation of statistics or our quality reports. We have a quality assurance system for that, and we have our quality audits. Sometimes it's also called quality reviews. I'm not sure what to actually call it. I call it audits now. And then we have the process model, which is the GSBPM. So the starting point is, of course, the code of practice. If we go for the documentation of statistics, indicator 4.3 and 15.5. I won't go into that. The standards we used, SIMS, ESQRS, ESMS, GSBPM. Our metadata system is a software called Collectica. It's based on DDI. And the beautiful thing about it is that we have put all the SIMS fields in, so we can produce all kinds of reports, ESQRS reports, ESMS reports, and we have this almost one-button system to extract ESQRS reports and send it directly to the ESS metadata handler, which is very practical. And we have all, I think, 250, 60 products is documented in this system. So we have for national accounts, for environmental statistics, everything. We have all the SIMS fields filled in for the statistical products. Also, any new release of statistics should be followed by an updated version of the documentation of statistics. This can be a little hard for the producers of statistics because they're used to producing numbers. So we have this model, Swedish inspired, that we use as a motivation. Producing statistics is about describing phenomena in this society. And so there's we do something, we try to describe some objective reality out there with objective with an ideal population and ideal variables with true values, all this, which cannot, of course, be measured in almost all cases. So we have to conceptualize, and we have to be architects. We have to make statistical systems that are where we can work as statisticians. So we get the reality as it is conceived by the statistician. So the next step is the reality as it is presented by data. So then we get the reality as it is perceived by the respondents. And in the end, we have our tables, we've done all the production, the modeling, everything, and the users get their statistics, and it is statistics as they interpret it. And I guess some of the users, they will see the objective reality and they will say, yes, this is what we get. But then we, as statisticians, need to tell them what happens on the way, what conceptual choices we made, and the discrepancies stemming from that, and then also what we get from the reporters and the discrepancies stemming from that. So SIMS covers all this and a little more. So after we've shown this model, a lot of people say, okay, now I know what it is, but still we need a little translation to get to SIMS. But it is getting in the right direction. So the documentation of statistics is there to help the users understand the statistics and figure out whether it is fit for their use, if it's quality for them. I won't go into with 12 minutes. I'll just jump a little. And we've chosen to present the documentation of statistics at our webpage in sort of three levels. I'll just jump to the first level here. This is what you get when you open a documentation of statistics at our webpage. You have the contact information, it follows all the way through. And these are the front page fields, as we call them, that you see here. And they're just the headlines in SIMS. They're not actually SIMS fields. We made them into fields to fill in. And we say it's for the normal user, for the high school student or the journalist. So you have to sort of make the selling remarks there about statistical presentation, processing, relevance, accuracy and reliability, and so on. And that's the first level. So the next level is when you press the blue, read more about statistical presentation. It's like that all the way. And then you get the actual SIMS fields there, the user-oriented ones we've chosen to put on the web page. So that's level one and two. And level three is if you have some more detailed information, you can make annexes to this. And the idea where this raising awareness comes in and continuous improvement is the cycle we have for documentation of statistics. You need to update it with any release. So this is something that is continuous. On the top, it's edit mode. This is where you update your documentation. The next step is quality assurance. And that will be the quality unit reading through, making comments, ensuring some sort of standard being met. And then back to the subject matter responsible who fixes it, maybe a little back and forth. And then it's approved and it can be disseminated on the web page. And we go over again. So the next pillar is the quality audits. We started out in 2015. We basically almost just copied the Norwegian model. Don't have to invent the wheel when it's already there. So we started out very easy with not too complex statistical products. But in 2017, I think this was sort of a peak of complexness where we audited all tourism statistics and the labor force survey, SILC, Consumer Price Index, and the Household Budget Survey. We used that with a team of experts, that is me, the quality coordinator, with a senior expert, junior expert, and last year we had external experts from Sweden or Norway, so we could do it in Danish. So the audits are done with a self-assessment form based on code of practice, documentation, having a meeting, and then producing a report with the recommendations, having another meeting, making sure that the recommendations are not based on misunderstandings. We might not agree on them, but as long as it's not based on misunderstandings, that will be the recommendations, and the statistical unit will come up with an action plan. And the report and action plan will be put on our intranet and also sent to the top management. And it will be followed up on every 2-3 months. I think I said all this. So the third pillar is the process model, which is the GSBPM. And the GSBPM is chosen, or it's there as a standard, it's generic, it's good, and it's good because of the quality aspect and because of the efficiency aspect, where you the quality of our statistics is sort of based on the input we get. We can do something about that, but it's also based on the processes we have. We can do a lot about that. And then also efficiency in the way of sharing practices. So we can have standardized ways of looking at things. So it's also used as a frame of analysis and gradual improvement. We say that it's difficult to improve something that is not described. So it's a good starting point if you want to move on. And it's good to assist in common processes. And it's very good as a tool to facilitate training of new employees. It's visualized in a way. So the GSBPM model, I won't go into that because I think most of you have been there. I'm just going to say something more about how we use it. When we implemented the Collectica, we wanted also the documentation of statistics to be part of the production process. So we introduced it together with the GSBPM. We mapped all the SIMS fields to GSPPM, so we said that when you're working on specifying needs, that's where you can fill in contact information, relevance, and so on. And when you start your designing and building, you can say some, you can write all the fields about your conceptual choices, how you chose to measure things, how you chose to put make the statistical processing, and so on. And then analysis, that's where you fill in your sampling errors and so on. And you that's something you need to update maybe every time, but the rest is once and used many times since it's the SIMS fields and you can just extract the information you need. Also, how GSPPM in the everyday, I think a lot of our colleagues, they were like, what's in it for me? And we said, well, you can start by organizing your working documents in a filing structure as the GSPPM. In that way, you don't have to know that it was Peter developing some system. You have to find it under the Peter's files. You can go in and see, well, he put up the validation process. So if you look under 5.3, that's where you find it. And you also find it there if you change domain, because they will use the same thing. It's not there yet, but it's slowly, continuously improving. And then also how is the way we actually do the documentation according to GSPPM. This is just a picture. It's in Danish. You don't have to read it. It's just for the visualization. It's some dynamic documentation as an HTML file that you can look up on our intranet, and you can sort of click your way through. But this shows, this is for 4.2, so it's preparing for data collection, I think. So what you see is sort of two functions being active in that, and the different activities that should be done in that sub-process. So that's how it works in the when it's done. So that's it, raising awareness in Denmark. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karin. We will now move to the third presentation, which will be done by Karsten Schumann. He will be presenting his paper on coherence, accuracy, and flexibility in the area of business statistics. He's been working for 10 years in official statistics in the Statis, coordinating the business statistics. He embraces all FRIBS related issues, including implementation of new data requirements. And he will present to us today how to deal with and the trade-off between getting to variables from two different domains with different values. You can start.
Thank you. Well, first I must admit and excuse, I'm presenting the work of a task force here. And when I tried to condense the 10-page paper with our intermediate results to a 10-minute presentation, all that survived were our questions, not so much the results. So I realized yesterday that I'm a little bit an outlier here. But I brought some questions to you, the international community of experts, where we hope on an interesting discussion. So coherence, accuracy, flexibility, the title already references to the dimensions of the code of practice, as Konrad Pesendorfer mentioned yesterday. Some of them have a positive correlation, some have a negative. And so this is the question here, do we have a trade-off between these three, or is it possible to combine it? And flexibility, I mean, that's not contained in the code of practice, but I would put that right between relevance and timeliness, because in our perception, that's the ability, the responsiveness to react on newly arising data demand and to reuse existing data and analyze that and satisfy new needs. And of course, I chose an example of business statistics. And so actually, this also builds up on your introduction very well, because it's about the discrepancies between the objective reality and our results. So these two domains, SBS, structural business statistics, and BD, business demography, both are currently based on the same regulation. That's the SBS recast from 2008. but they live quite an independent life next to each other. They coexist more or less. And two variables are overlapping. So that's the number of active enterprises and number of employees and self-employed persons. And the reason why they coexist more or less is because SBS in most member states and also in Germany is sample-based, and business demography is always an analysis of the business register because you need a panel of the complete population. So they used to coexist, and that was possible because the two variables that overlap had two different variable codes and slightly different definitions. So it was possible to transmit different results on this overlapping part, and it turned out that they deviated quite a bit, and they deviated in Germany so much that it was touching the credibility of the statistics. So we initiated the task force and tried to reduce the deviations to regain credibility. And with the upcoming framework regulation on integrating business statistics, Eurostat is going even a step further. They allow only one variable code, only one variable definition, and only one variable transmission from the member states to these two variables. So we really need to achieve identical results now. So that's a step further. And so I would consider that or translate this move as a shift from internal consistency to cross-domain coherence. So that's a new focus in my perception. So that's the slide on coherence. Now we come to accuracy. Let's assume we have a given aggregate. It's maybe medium-sized enterprises in manufacturing in a given NUTS2 region. So that's a very small aggregate that we need to publish. And for the sake of easy calculation of the example, I allowed a coefficient of variation of 10% for this aggregate. And so if the sample says we have 1,000 units and the register, which is the source for business demography, says we have slightly more, well, actually, the result of the sample needs to be interpreted, of course, as with a two-thirds probability, it's between 900 and 1,100, or even with 95% probability between 8 and 1,200. But then you could ask, well, but you do have a benchmark. Why don't you calibrate? And well, the reason why we are hesitant to start calibrating is because we know that the benchmark contains noise. That's mainly the quality of the NACE codes, which is not the main focus of the administrations that provide the admin data. So the true calibration target might be somewhere completely else, but unknown. And most of all, or most important, why... okay, this was supposed to look different. It was supposed to be a red background. Most importantly, all non-calibrated results can be biased. All results and variables that cannot be benchmarked, and in the administrative data source, we only have employment and turnover and number of units. So everything else could be biased if we calibrate according to these variables. And also the sheer amount of breakdowns that need to be provided for the two domains raise the question if it will converge the model in the end. Okay, so that's my slide to accuracy. If we realize that there is a danger of bias if we start calibrating, then we need to ask, okay, how does that affect flexibility? And of course, SBS microdata is used for the production of SBS results that could be calibrated, but already FETS is combined the microdata with additional information about control. Then also there's a sheer unpredictable amount, I mean, almost infinite amount of further analysis that could arise on new issues. For example, the DG Grow is asking us to analyze the small and medium enterprises according to control structures to have the independent SMEs and not those that belong to a bigger enterprise groups. Or also trade by enterprise characteristics, we look how the cost structures are different by enterprises that are engaged in foreign trade, the international traders. So, and this is an infinite list. Any new idea, once you start linking the microdata, once you are able to merge with the business register as infrastructure, it's unpredictable to know the analysis. So it's difficult to calibrate if you are not aware what the microdata will be used for afterwards. So this is my question. How will it affect the reuse of data? And now I would like to just have one slide on the outcome of the task force. As I said, we had severe deviations also in Germany. And this is the system as it used to be. A lot of stovepipes, we had data gaps, and we had an outdated sample frame. In the older days, it used to be 2 years. The reference year of the admin data was 2 years before the time when the sample was drawn. So a lot of units had ceased or ceased to exist or switched the NACE code. So there was actual movement in the meantime. And then, of course, there were some erroneous NACE codes in the admin data. So I have the greatest respect for the business register team who actually managed to accelerate the production of the sample frame to reference year T, the reference year of SBS, at the time when the sample is drawn for SBS. So then there will be no enterprises declared active that have ceased to exist in the meantime, because this will be the final frame. And the sad part of it is that will only come into effect with the reference year 2017, so we have to wait for the results for the impact on the deviations. And still a remaining issue is, of course, movements or outdated NACE codes in the admin data, because, of course, the Social Security does not look for NACE, and also the financial, the tax authorities, they're not so much interested in NACE, they're interested in employment or turnover. Okay, then the remaining issue, if you have outdated NACE codes and you have a stovepipe system like this, it's very difficult to move one unit to the next stovepipe. So with the upcoming regulation on framework, regulation on integrating business statistics, we aim to merge that, first close the data gaps. I mean, the only remaining data gaps would be O and S94. Which are excluded from the business statistics coverage. And for K, we have admin data, so from banking oversight and insurance oversight. But all other sections will be grouped into two legal environments based on only two legal acts and two IT environments. So it's much easier to pass on information. And then also with the implementation of the statistical unit enterprise, we will introduce a central data set, one data warehouse where all validated microdata will be brought together and will be consolidated for any further analysis. So this will bring us to a point, not today, I mean the acceleration of the business registers 2017 reference year, then statistical unit is reference year 2018, and FRIPS is somewhere in the near future, hopefully. At this point of time, we will have the total aggregate equal. We will have the same amount of units in business or in the business register as in the results of SBS, but still, our concern, the headache that I brought here to discuss with you is the treatment of misclassifications. So we have two sections here, just randomly taken. It's G and M, and the size class breakdown that needs to be delivered. And of course, we have sample units in these. The lines would be the units that we have in the survey. And then we will expand them to cover the whole frame. The same on the other side. And now let's assume we identify a misclassification. I don't know if you see one unit is changing the color. So that needs to be over here. And it's easy to reassign this one unit, but how do you treat the expansion factor? Should you assign that to the other section as well? The theoretical point would be quite clear, of course, because it's a representative sample. And it needs to take all units. If movement between NACE codes is representative, then it should be moved along. But that's impossible to follow up in the business register, so there will be deviations between business demography and SBS results. And even more severe, if you have different size class breakdowns, again, we have the sample units. We have sample units here, and they are grossed up. And now this one is changing the NACE code, needs to be over there. How do you treat this much larger expansion factor? Should that be squeezed into this smaller stratification? So this, because these are publication breakdowns and data requirements from Eurostat, and to us it's a newly arising issue, because up to now we treated wrong NAICS codes as overcoverage in the sample frame and deleted the unit. So how do you treat different expansion factors? These are the questions that I would like to leave for discussion. I realize it's not common to pose the questions as presenter, but okay, so how are your experiences? Do you calibrate? If you do calibrate, how is the quality of your benchmark? Do you have noise and outdated NAICS codes in the benchmarks? And if so, how do you treat them? How do you treat misclassifications? Do you take the expansion factor along and try to follow that up in the microdata of the business register, or how do you assess that? Or do you ignore the new information and only store that for the next reference year? So there are lots of possibilities, and we have very controversial discussions in my office about this, and I thought I'll just bring it here and leave it for discussion. And then the final question, of course, is there a trade-off, or can we have it all? Minimal bias, maximal flexibility, and identical results on every breakdown. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karsten. Here's some food for thought. We can reflect as his questions, and we can tackle them at the end. I will now invite Laurie Reedman. She will present a paper which is called Modest Attempt at Measuring and Communicating About Quality, and her experiences at Statistics Canada. She is working as a methodologist in Statistics Canada. From 2008 until March 2018, she held the position of Chief of Statistics Canada's Quality Secretariat. In that role, she provided training and consultation on quality management, both within Canada and in several other countries. She has taken very recently a new role, participating in initiatives to reduce Statistics Canada's dependence on survey data for the production of social statistics. As a particular interest, you will see from her presentation, is how to measure accuracy when we can't rely on sampling error. So, Laurie, please, okay, the floor is yours.
So I also had planned to start with a bit of a confession. I may have been overly optimistic when I wrote the abstract, and at this moment I have only questions and not answers. So I'm especially pleased to follow Karsten, and perhaps we form a node rather than being two outliers. Okay, so that works. So here are the points I'm hoping to cover in the next 11 and a half minutes. I don't think I need to go too deeply into the context from other talks I've heard this week. I believe there are many of us facing the same situation. And so as we move away from surveys and towards making more and more use of admin data, we've formulated a research question and put together a research project where we're trying to figure out how should we measure and report quality in this new context. So to answer the question, we first tried to kind of unpack it, figure out what are the different pieces that need to be answered. So first, how to measure? Well, that looks at which dimensions or aspects of quality are important, and we'll talk about that on the next slide. But the second part of the question about reporting, well, that depends on who you're talking to. So who is your audience? And so we made this little diagram of who we think our audience or our stakeholders are. And on the left, we see the internal audience, ourselves. Often we forget to address ourselves with our quality indicators, but we use them to manage our own processes, to manage the consumption of our own resources. On the external side, as we've heard in several other talks, there's a wide range of stakeholders or potential users of our data, starting with the casual users, perhaps that's the high school students, journalists, going on to researchers, policymakers, and then a category I just called other. There could be other people with purposes that we do not yet understand, or who perhaps are not yet aware or connected with our data, but if we could reach them, then they might become users of our data. All right, so looking at the quality dimensions, the traditional dimensions that we all know and love still remain, of course, but when we start using data that we did not source ourselves, then we need to consider other aspects or dimensions of quality. So in the left-hand column are things that we might want to consider at the input stage when we are deciding whether or not to use a particular external source of data. So the data producers themselves, do we consider them to be an authority on that particular subject matter? And these other questions or aspects that you see in the left-hand box. When we move to the throughput stage, here's where we are doing our own processing of the data, where we're working to maximize accuracy, reliability, coverage bias. We're measuring these things so we can produce the indicators that we wish from these processing steps. Then at the output stage, this is where that's the question. What should we report on our output data sets? And in the right-hand column here, I just listed a few things that the savvy data user is able to judge for themselves. Fitness for use is in the eye of the user. So whether this data is relevant to them is really up to them to decide. But there are certain things that we can provide to the data users to help inform their decisions about whether or not that data is fit for their use. So this slide, it was deliberate that I wrote draft across it and made it a little bit difficult for you to read, because this is merely a suggestion, a starting point for a discussion about what quality indicators should accompany data that's composed from different sources. So this has been hotly debated at our office. On the right-hand side is the list of quality dimensions that you saw in the previous slide. The left-hand side is just a column of yeses. These are the ones that we've agreed that we should be looking at internally. Okay, that's easy. The fun part is in the middle. So here's where we're trying to figure out which of these indicators should be communicated on to the data user or reported to the users, and which ones are of no use to them. So I'll just talk about one or two of them. For example, linkability. I made that word up. That's not an English word, but the idea is, how easy is it to link this data set to another data set? And this is something we would want to promote or advertise to our data users so that they will they'll know how easy it is to link it to other sources that they have. So whether it has unique identifiers or good quality address and other geographic indicators that or variables that they can use to do their own deterministic or probabilistic linkage. So certainly we would want to include that. But then something like processability, another word that we just kind of made up. When we're bringing in data from other sources, there's often challenges in just cracking it open. Where did this data come from? What format is it in? What software do we need to use? How do we need to transform it? Was it originally at the same level of what's the unit of observation? Do you have to do manipulations so that you can even use this data? So while we may have put enormous effort and energy into that ourselves, does the user really care? Do they need to know that by the time we produce the output data set? In the name of accessibility, we would want to make it as processable as we can, but perhaps we don't need to share our story of getting to that point with the data users. So those indicators then would form one part of the metadata that would be made available to users. So how should we display or share those indicators? Perhaps we could put it into some kind of a list, like a nutritional label that you find on some foods. Or we've thought about some kind of a composite indicator. This was brought up yesterday morning in a question to a presenter from iStat, and I share her response in saying, that might be nice, but I don't think we're there yet. Or another idea is some kind of infographic, like a spider web graph, or I heard it referred to as a radar diagram, you know, with the multi-axis. The challenge with that is that if you change which axis is what, then the shape of your spider web changes as well. But maybe going back to who are our users, who's our audience, and knowing that we have a wide range of ability and need among our audience, then perhaps we should be reporting our quality in a variety of different ways. So an infographic accompanied by other means to communicate the same message on different levels. Other things that should be included in that metadata, Karen already did a great job of listing different things, the ones that came to my mind for this presentation. What assumptions, compromises, limitations are there in the data? We've had a long tradition of communicating this in our metadata, but perhaps we could go a little bit further to explain what is the impact on the usability. The producers of official statistics, we have some value added there. We have enormous experience and ability in dealing with data, and I think we can play a role in informing the choices of our data users by giving them more of our insight into what this data means and what it can be used for. Also, in the training course I took 2 days ago, we talked about certification. So I think if you are an office who does some kind of certification, then that could be reported in the metadata as well. What standard was used, who did the assessment, and I would hope that in that assessment you included both an evaluation of the product and of the process. So that brings me to the meat of the issue. So when all we did was surveys, there was still non-survey error, but we had math to give us a standard error for the sampling part, and so that was where we spent most of our energy talking about accuracy, and then we built coefficient of variation or confidence intervals based on that math. So now you take that part away, and what have we got? What are we going to do? How are we going to quantify the variability or the bias in our data when we don't have a standard error anymore? So just to briefly explain accuracy there, I'm looking at how close is your number to reality, and then reliability, how good are you at being accurate through time? Many of our statistical programs are repeated through time. You have a monthly program or an annual, and so this reliability becomes very important as well. The errors can be systematic, so resulting in a bias one way or the other, or random, resulting in noise. So I've done a little bit of research already. There was a nice paper from Statistics Netherlands that referenced other good papers as well, using data validation, confrontation techniques, even some resampling methods. So these are all good potentials. There's some potential to use a bootstrap method. Under certain circumstances, we heard from a presenter from Austria yesterday that when they tried using a bootstrap method, they wound up with significant bias, and then when they pounded that back over where it should have been, their variability went crazy. So there are certainly challenges with the math of how to figure this out. Okay, that's great, because I'm wrapping up. So the next steps are that my colleague Steve, who's up there in the audience, we're here looking for collaborators. We're looking to work with others to figure out this question. All the other indicators, we'll get there. Those aren't too bad. But the accuracy one, that's kind of the fun part, is what are we going to do to try and measure or estimate accuracy? We don't want to reinvent the wheel either. We'd rather work together, take a best ball approach for the golfers in the room. That's my question I'm putting to you, is who else would like to go on this journey towards an accuracy indicator with us? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lori. Very interesting presentation. We'll now move on to the last presentation of this session, which will be done by Heather Bechdel from Statistics Sweden. The paper is called Fulfilling the European Statistics Code of Practice and Assessments of Quality in Official Statistics. So Heather is working as Quality Coordinator at Statistics Sweden. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Alex. Yes, I'm going to be talking about quality assessments or assessments of quality in official statistics. Stats Sweden I was just so happy to hear the previous speakers because there's just so much to that relates to each other. We think a lot alike, I think. we have a quality management system at SAT Sweden that includes certification according to ISO 22252, the branch standard on statistics. And for that purpose, we have quality audits in place, and that is done on a sample basis internally, and that's required by the ISO standard. We also, these are not methodological audits, though. We do have external methodological audits at Stat Sweden, which we do with a system called Aspire. Paul Beamer will be talking about that at a seminar tomorrow. And we choose our most important products, and we have regular external assessments for these products. But these assessments that I'm going to be talking about, they are of another character. They are self-assessments, and they are, we can say it's a census survey ordered by the, basically ordered by the government. So come along and see what we've done. The background on this for these assessments is basically the fact that our government is obliged by the European Union now to make a commitment on confidence in statistics yearly to the Commission, and this is stipulated in the EU regulation for European statistics. Or the amendment is given here, 20. Oh, I think we've got the, no, it's the right year, 2015. Just prior to 2017 in the government budget bill, our government in Sweden declared which measures were in place so that they could make a commitment on confidence, and they had in 2013 put in the quality criteria for European statistics in the Swedish Statistics Act to mark how quality in official statistics was important. 2016, they amended the ordinance appointing Stat Sweden as an NSI, or National Statistical Institute, and they also strengthened the mandate for the Council of Official Statistics that we have in Sweden to support statistics in it, Statistics Sweden in its role. In 2016, they also amended the ordinance on official statistics to say that all statistical authorities in Sweden, all 28 of them, should evaluate the quality of official statistics, and Stat Sweden was to issue executional regulations to show how this would go about. And we were also obliged as NSI to submit the analysis of the results for all of these statistical authorities to the government of Sweden. And the government declared here also that it deemed that these three measures were sufficient at present in order to maintain confidence in statistics, but that they would be following the developments over time. So we should note here also that the commitment on confidence really has to do with European statistics, and I've been talking about official statistics, but most of our European statistics in or for Sweden are also official statistics. However, it's not quite true the other way around. All official statistics are not European statistics. Yes, so these executional regulations that we were obliged to issue for official statistics, we have issued three regulations in years 2016, 2017. The first one was very important in 2016, where we communicated an updated quality concept, which should be used to describe the quality in the development, the production, and the dissemination of official statistics. So we were really used to using our quality concept, particularly in the dissemination in our quality reports. But this emphasized the fact that the quality concept should be used to describe quality in right from the very beginning, starting with development. The next regulation amended a previous regulation issued in 2002 with a template for our quality reports. So these regulations, they are directed to all 28 of the statistical authorities in Sweden. The third regulation issued in 2017 was to further give instructions for the statistical authorities on these self-evaluation forms to assess the quality of official statistics. And so the national authorities are obliged to use this template that we have communicated and obliged to do the evaluation once every year. And to support a consistent implementation of these regulations, we've issued a handbook on quality for official statistics. I can show it to you right here. And also another handbook on the evaluation of quality in official statistics. I'd like to start off, I'll show you the different areas of the evaluation, but a very important starting point for us is in our actual quality concept for official statistics, because that's what we will be evaluating against, different quality components. And an important quality component that has been further, or that has been established and clarified, its subcomponents have been clarified compared to earlier quality concepts that we have, is relevance. And here we have actually put or identified a main component, or sorry, a subcomponent, the purpose of the statistics. You can see that on the right hand side. It's that we have subcomponents and subcomponents, but a very important subcomponent is the purpose of statistics. And one can think that, well, this must be fairly obvious. What's the purpose of statistics? I mean, we're talking about purpose of the particular statistics that are being published, of course. But fact of the matter is that there are many of our statistical authorities in Sweden that are not quite clear on the purpose of the statistics that they are publishing. They feel that maybe they inherited the production and responsibility of the statistics from Stat Sweden, so they say, well, Stat Sweden should know the purpose, but it's their responsibility to know the purpose. It's their responsibility to have contact with and dialogue with the users and to know what they are doing and why. So this is an extremely important starting point for us. And then we go further in under relevance to describe the content of the statistics. And there we make the same distinctions, actually, as Denmark does with the theoretical concepts, or we call it the concepts or the characteristics of interest. And then we go over to the target characteristics, and then the observation characteristics, or the observation variables, and so on. We delineate all of those under content of statistics, under relevance. So if we go to the self-evaluations of quality, we've been talking a lot about cyclical approaches here, and this is also a cyclical approach. If you bear in mind that I said that the quality concept should be used to describe the quality in the development, production, and dissemination. So there we have a cycle in itself. And this cycle is illustrating that even more. So what we do is we start with the purpose of statistics when we're going to develop statistics. Then we look at the quality requirements. What are the quality requirements of the statistics to be produced? And then we have to design a survey, whether it be a sample survey or another type of survey. And then we can first, then after the production, we can look at the outcome. What is the outcome of quality? And then we can assess the outcome and give feedback to the coming year. So this is a tool for us to make continuous improvements within the system of official statistics. It's up to the statistical agency in itself to use this as a tool. And the starting point is actually fitness for purpose, because we have our starting point in the purpose of statistics. We are not producing statistics for all uses. We cannot even probably overview all the uses of our statistics, but we need to identify the most important uses and then articulate a purpose. And that is what our goal is. So if we go to the self-evaluation questions, and I've packed a lot into this slide as it relates to the code of practice, because all of our statistical authorities in Sweden actually are aiming towards fulfilling the European Statistics Code of Practice. So it's very important to show how what we're doing nationally relates to the code of practice. But on the left side, you see 8 different areas or sections of our questionnaire. We start off with the information needs and the purpose of the statistics. Then we go to the quality requirements. So you can bear in mind the cyclical approach. Then we ask a question about quality studies and lessons learned compared to the previous evaluation. These first 3 sections of the self-evaluation pertain to statistical areas. So each statistical authority is, according to the statistical ordinance, responsible for a certain area of statistics. And then there's a breakdown into statistical products within that area. So the first 3 questions, and there are sub-questions as well, there we are focusing on the actual statistical area. Then the next 5 sections focus on statistical products. So then we get into the survey design and the quality requirements per quality component, if the design meets the quality requirements. And then quality and statistics, the outcome. Then the actual production of the statistics and how it differed from the previous evaluation. And then the quality in the statistics, if there are larger differences compared to the previous evaluation per quality component. And then we do a special deepening in the quality assessment regarding accuracy and comparability. On the right-hand side, you can see how I've tried to relate to what we are doing with the principles of the code of practice. I won't go into every one in detail, but there's a natural connection between principles 11 to 15 for statistical output and this self-evaluation, because we have all of these principles reflected in our quality components, i.e. relevance, accuracy, timeliness and punctuality, accessibility and clarity, and also comparability and coherence. But then there are certain... there are some that connect generally to that, and then there are some other sections that connect more specifically. But also I'd like to highlight the principle of appropriate statistical procedures, because there it talks a lot about assessment and monitoring, validation of our statistical processes and outputs, sources, etc. And that is being done here as well in our evaluation. Also, the even principle 3, adequacy of resources, there we are supposed to assess new needs against costs, and that's what, in fact, we do under relevance according to our quality concept. Also that under appropriate statistical procedures, we should be looking at the definitions of concepts so as so that they meet our statistical requirements when we're going to be using administrative data and so on, but also in general to keep the definitions relevant. So we believe that this is a very valuable tool for us to in order to fulfill the code of practice helps us out here.
Heather, I'm going to ask you to wrap up, please. We're running.
Do I have 1 minute? Thank you. This is my last slide. I was just going to share some conclusions that we've been able to make after the first round of the self-evaluation. So all the questions pertaining to the previous evaluation 1 year prior have not been relevant this year. But the first statement I've already gone into, also that it's a constructive device for continuous improvements. We believe that this whole exercise, including the updated quality concept, have raised the quality awareness within our NSI and with the other national authorities of the importance of quality issues and statistics. There is a lot of discussion about the purpose of statistics and quality requirements. We have the need to have ongoing discussions about these issues together with the 28 national authorities on how to meet user needs together. And we also need to think, we've drawn the conclusion that we need to think more in terms of our statistical areas than just particular statistical products in order to meet user needs. We also need to fine-tune the questionnaire, and we need to fine-tune our analysis to the government so that they also understand the results. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much, Heather, and to all the presenters. I'm going to group the question and discussion in two areas. So if we could start with 2-3 questions on the more general presentations from Javier, Karin, and Heather, and then we will go to the questions raised by Karsten and Laurie on their papers, if you know mine. So a few questions on the...
Thank you very much. Thomas Burg, Statistics Austria. First of all, thanks to all the presenters for the excellent presentations. I have a question which regards the presentations of Karin and also Javier. In your presentation, Karin, you mentioned that it is possible for your software to directly put the filled in European quality report structure SIMS to the ESS metadata handler. So my question to Karin and Javier is it possible to create software which is communicating directly with the ESS metadata handler and how to proceed to organize this? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next question or remark? Yes?
Yes, thank you a lot for your presentation. I have a question for Karsten about the administrative data. You said that sometimes there are some double counting that produce noises. Would it be possible to reduce this kind of noise in order to achieve a calibration of good quality? I mean, by reducing the double counting, for instance.
Thank you. Please state also your name and your affiliation. More questions for Javier? Yes, please.
Just a general question. In the last, I'm not quite sure it's in the appropriate section, but I've got started. I'll answer it. Ask it anyway. In the paper we've just had, there was a description of a mention of a quality template and then of an annual self-assessment form, and I wondered how they related to one another. And the second question is a more general one. When you're coming to quality assessment templates, what do the panel think? Should they be basically organized around the COP, quality dimensions, as it were, or quality principles, or should they be organized around the process, the GSBPM process, or both?
Thank you very much. We can take one more question, and then we'll have first round. Yes?
Caroline Wilecke, European Central Bank. I would be interested in hearing a couple of words more from Karin on the statistical audit. You mentioned a bit the composition of the team, but for example, the expert that come from Statistics Denmark, are they internal to the group that is producing the statistics? Is it kind of an internal peer review? And I would also be interested in how long it takes and what the follow-up is to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will ask the speakers to reply to questions. We can start with the first question for Karin and Javier, and then maybe the last question for Karin.
Okay, to the question of Thomas, yes, it is possible for your own software. Either you can use the own metadata handler and adapt it, but it's also possible that if you have your own tool to communicate with the metadata handler. This is why we use standards, SDMX standards, and metadata structure definitions and metadata flows. It would be only be a question of abiding by the requirements. But yes, I mean, I would need to put you in touch with the IT colleagues who design the tools, but yes, it's possible.
thank you, yeah. It is possible, but it's not completely automatic. You have to sort of press two buttons and then you're there. But it's an extraction made and an XML file, I think, that is transferred to the ESS metadata handler. So everything is good as long as the domains don't do special things, like having extra fields, having some fields that are not going to be part of it, because this is just all the SIMS fields or the ESMS fields or the ESQRS fields. Mm. Did I answer the European Central Bank, our audits? It's the expert group is a senior expert with plus 25 years or plus 20 years of experience in Statistics Denmark, not from the field, but by chance could have some experience in that field, but general knowledge of statistical production. And the junior expert is some junior person who is interested in this and can sort of have some sort of education in this. And it's depending on the statistical product that we are auditing, some things take more time. Like the household budget survey is a very complex survey, so. Diving deep into that takes time to understand and to give the right recommendations. But we have the self-assessment is given to the statistical units, and they have 1 or 2 weeks to fill it out and send it in to me so I can share it with the expert group. And we have the audit meeting, which is only about 2.5 hours. And then we wrap it up and have the follow-up meeting, which can take maybe 1 hour. So all in all, it's not very much time used, but it takes a little time anyway. And when we have the final report, then we give the statistical unit 3 weeks to wrap up and give us an action plan. And the follow-up is done every 2-3 months, depending on my time, because that will be me just visiting the statistical unit, asking them how they're doing on the action plan.
Thank you for the question. It gives me the chance to clarify that, because I think it was not smart of me to put double counting on the top of the list. That was mainly for layout reasons. So Double counting is not a big issue for us. There are some mismatches, but we have an additional software that runs over the mismatches and looks for addresses. And there's a variety of steps to reduce the mismatches. So this is not the main issue. It's NACE codes, outdated NACE codes in the administrative data, because the administrations providing the data are just simply not so interested in NACE codes. They look for other variables during the validation process. So thanks. Should have sorted the list in a different order, but so thanks for the chance to clarify. And now having the mic, there's another issue I forgot. When we talk about methods to ensure consistency, I'm sure we will talk about imputations as well on microdata level. I would like to remind that business demography needs to be published down to the NUTS 3 level. So that's a very small local breakdown. In Germany, these would be with 30 to 50,000 inhabitants. So it's very local results. And if you start moving around microdata based on imputations, based on estimations, it could result in complete nonsense on the local area.
Thank you. And Heather, could you please take the two questions?
Thank you for your question about the relationship between our quality reporting template and the quality assessment test template. I'll attempt to give an answer. Maybe Joachim wants to comment. As I said, we have part of the assessment template or the evaluation template is on the statistical area level. So those questions would probably not be related to the quality report for a particular product. But the product questions, the five product main questions, I think that they are a little bit more analytic than what would be obvious maybe in a quality declaration, although the results of the analysis that is given under those questions should probably provide input to the quality report and would fit in well with the template because we're using the quality concept structure. But it's not an automatic one-to-one relationship. I think there would require some reflection as to how one would handle that in the quality report.
If any of you have some answer for the question on the appropriateness of code of practice or GSBPM, something more to add.
Thank you, Michael, for this question. So at Statistics Canada, we did do quality reviews for many years, and we had the GSBPM on the table for those discussions. Because when you're talking to people who actually work on statistical programs, the easiest thing for them to relate to is the tasks and activities that they are doing. And so we were asking them to look at what quality assurance practices they apply and what are the risks that they encounter or challenges or weaknesses or whatever word you want to choose. So we walked them through their activities. Then when we were consolidating that information into some kind of summary report, we were then mapping it to which dimensions of quality were most affected. So it was more of a matrix, a two-dimensional way that we approached it.
Thank you. If you have one or two, we have time for two questions for particular, if you have for Karsten or Lori.
Thank you very much for the interesting presentation. I have more like an answer for Karsten because he raised several questions. Well, I would like to share how we proceed with misclassification in European farm structure surveys. I'm working for Eurostat. My name is Denisa Florescu. So in European farm structure surveys that are typically based on sample surveys, we keep the original strata of the agricultural holdings. So we take along the extrapolation factor except for the outliers. So if we have units with small or relatively small values in the sampling frame and big values in the reference period, Then for these units, we move them into take all strata and assign them the weight 1. And there are also some countries that afterwards calibrate the weight, so we will have final calibrated weight in the end. I also take advantage of the microphone to add that in farm structure surveys we are taking stock of the useful experience and recommendation from both Statistics Canada and of course from the Eurostat and European recommendation on quality and metadata on Statistics Canada. We recently, from Statistics Canada, we took the example of the quality rating system for farm environmental management surveys that is based on coefficients of variation and standard errors. So this system, we are now applying it in farm structure surveys and it guides us whether to disseminate or to suppress from dissemination the estimates for various table cells. From Eurostat, we are taking the recommendation from the ESS quality handbook on quality measures on administrative data, and we are looking forward to the results from the ESS FIP admin, the guidelines on quality on multi-source statistics. Thank you.
So I think we have time for one or maybe two. Yeah, we'll take two, Mr. Ladies. Maybe we take the both questions and then.
Thank you. I'm Susana Portillo from Central Statistics Office in Ireland. I just have a quick question for Karen and Javier following up from what Thomas asked earlier on. So if you generate your XML file to upload to the metadata handler, my understanding is that there's a number of fields that get populated by Eurostat rather than by the NSI. So I just wonder how you deal with those. Do you leave them blank or what do you do with them? Thanks.
Yeah, we can take the second comment or question here in the first row.
Hello, I'm Georgiana Ivan from Eurostat. I work in social statistics. I found Lori's presentation very interesting. And I have, I don't know, a remark, a question, I'm not sure, in this direction. Because I also think that except researchers, and maybe data journalists or very specialized people, most users really don't want to know anything about the internal kitchen, so to speak. They think, okay, it's labeled Eurostat or Statistics Canada, so it means that those numbers, they reflect reality. And I think what we need is really how to teach people that they should take the statistics with a grain of salt in general. So we are much more cautious about our statistics, which is good because we know that it's very difficult also to reply to Karsten's last question. We are not in a perfect world, so we cannot achieve this perfect balance of accuracy and timeliness and all the quality criteria met perfectly. There are always trade-offs. So I think what we need more is in this direction of statistical literacy and really, because our metadata or what we say that, okay, these statistics, they are not perfect. It's like a disclaimer that we have to communicate, I agree, but we have to find maybe friendlier ways to communicate this so that people really look at them and take them into account. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So Karin, if you would like to start, answer the question.
Yes, well, to my Irish colleague, that's one of the problems when they have pre-filled fields and they have all these tables with a lot of numbers that you need to comment on, then we can't use our system. Then you have to copy-paste instead on the fields that you are not to fill in. Because we have filled in all fields of SIMS, and that's it.
Yeah, thank you. Karsten and Laurie, if you want to.
Thank you for the input. I mean, of course, we had these ideas also in our discussions, but I think this is exactly the trade-off or the gap that we need to bridge somehow. If you take the extrapolation factor along,
I mean, this is the very purpose of structural business statistics, is to identify and analyze the structure, the economic structure of the enterprise sector. So to me, it's quite natural the expansion factor should be taken along because it's a representative sample, and also movements between domains, between sections, should be considered representative. And this is why we make the effort of compiling structural business statistics to get better insight into structures. But now we need to somehow align that to another source. And so I felt like the some countries in farm statistics take the expansion factor along, others reweight, which is actually a form of calibration then again afterwards. So they would take the information they gain during the survey and blur it by calibrating again against the benchmark, against the external administrative data, which obviously showed some noise. So, and this is my remark to your input also. This is, I put down one note from the introduction speech of Pesendorfer, was that Albert Einstein said, everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler. And this is exactly the trade-off I see, is that should we try to educate the users and explain the difference, because it is a different source and a different method to compile business register populations and business demography results, other than sample surveys that are grossed up. So should we try to educate the users, or should we try to serve convenience food and balance everything out, wash all asymmetries? I mean, we don't, it's not really solving, it's covering up. So this is why we are not at a solution yet, because it is a difficult and delicate trade-off in my perception. So this is my reply to the remark. Anybody
else? Do you like to add something, or we can?
No, I just want to say thank you for expressing your views. I've heard others argue with the same hypothesis, that there are users who don't look and don't care about the CV, but their conclusion then is that so we can just not produce any kind of accuracy indicator and nothing will change. But I tend to agree with you that data literacy, improving data literacy, that we need to take on that role of educating our users how they should be using our data. So thank you.
So thank you very much to all the speakers and to the audience for the questions. If you would like you have some more questions, or you would like to cooperate with Statistics Canada in research projects, please feel free to address the speakers after the session. At the very end, I would like to remind you that you can pick up your own copy of the paper Code of Practice, revised Code of Practice, at the stand of Eurostat on the ground floor, if you have not done so till now. With that, thank you all, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.